extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from Kansas City. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, General Sal in the back. Is that's the general, right? I'm correct
general,
here.
Yeah,
look, NBA, you got nothing on Matt Doyle. Cats in the frame. Who cares? We've been doing that. Big show today. Excited for it. The second edition of our season previews. We got Real Salt Lake, Seattle Sounders, DC United, and Toronto FC coming your way. Plus, I don't know if you know this. I certainly don't. My mentions aren't filling up with hate mail. The U.S. national team has a roster out. They're going to play Jamaica, Northern Ireland, and we know who Greg Berhalter has called for that. And as we discuss it, we'll all sort of deal with our existential dread. Where does that come from, you might ask? Oh, Olympic qualifying. Of course, we won't get to talk about it. We will review it on Monday's show. U.S. Costa Rica is tonight. There is a big change. Ulises Yanez is out. Tanner Tessman is in from FC Dallas to Jason Kreis's team. We are also going to do our top five number 10s on today's show. Dave, you got the honors on that one. Kalen Carr, who is back, and we're so happy to have him. We'll have the number 9s on Monday. And before we get to the meat of this thing, remember MLSsoccer.com is your home for all the reaction, for all of this and all the coverage leading up to MLS's 26th season. Doyle, what do you got on there?
On... What? Sorry, I was zoning out for a second right there, thinking about the U.S. Olympic roster.
Oh, boy. MLSsoccer.com. You know, it's this website where Major League Soccer is covered. You might be the preeminent columnist on this website.
Why. You can see why it's columns and not podcasts, right? Roster build status for all 27 teams, because we are deep into the silly season now. And I mean, halfway through the preseason, really. So I took a look at all 27 teams. So if you are a little bit confused about what your team has done and what your rivals have done and what the teams on the other side of the continent have done, one-stop shopping on MLSsoccer.com. I also have an Olympic roster react, which we're about to talk – or not Olympic, a full national team roster react, which we're about to talk about. Mm-hmm. I will have – a react to this game, this Olympic qualifying game.
Hey, this is
tonight.
Good news right now. Get your struggles out right now. Mm-hmm. This is how much he puts into these columns, people. He basically drains his entire mental capacity into them. It's all gone.
Can I just say it? Doyle's LAFC in a big game right now. You know the peak. You know how good he can be. But it's a shaky start. It's El Tráfico.
Yikes.
It is a little bit. Which one of you is Zlatan?
I want to say that I am, but I respect myself too much to say that. I do have a column there as well.
Never a day in my life would anyone ever even make that joke. So maybe Anders.
Maybe Anders. Can Anders lift his leg above his waist?
What?
Because I can't. I'm just thinking of the things that Zlatan can do physically, and I can barely even like walk around my basement here to record this show. I do have a column there as well. Double-digit goal scorers.
Okay.
Who are the first ones from this year who've never done it before? I mean, never. Not ever in their professional careers. Tom Bogert also there with FC Cincinnati's ambition and what it means. Because, and we've talked about this a lot, so we won't talk about it again, they got him. They got their man. Lucho Acosta, we've been basically talking about it as if it's done, because it was basically done. Now it is done. They got his rights from DC United for $250,000 in GAM. He is a designated player. If you want to listen to our preview on FC Cincinnati, it is on the previous show, and we did speak about Lucho Acosta as if he was a member of that team. Before we get to the biggest news of the day, which is, of course, Daryl DK. Big ask here. Do us a massive favor. The best thing about this soccer thing and this podcast has always been, will always be, the community that's part of it. I was a part of that community before Simon and Nick ever begrudgingly like let me in the room and for whatever reason gave me a mic back in the day. We'd love to grow this little community. Yeah, that means more downloads, it means more views, but more importantly, it'll mean more people out there who love our game and our league. So if Extra Time is a part of your life that you enjoy, or just like marginally enjoy, please tell people about the show.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I'll take it.
Encourage your friends. If they like MLS, they might like us. So tell them about us. Tell them, hey, it's low risk. It's free. You don't have to pay anything. Is this a listener drive? Yeah, I don't know. Sure, why not? We don't have a phone bank, though. If Doyle wants to volunteer, we might. But from now until opening day, please spread the word. Extra Time is the best way to get hyped, informed, entertained ahead of 2021. And if you haven't subscribed, come on, just hit the button. Please do it and rate us nicely, or at least if you're going to roast us, just do it in a funny or creative way. That would be entertaining for all of us. All right. While we wait for MLS, it's about a month now. It's March 18th. April 16th is opening day. Daryl, DK, two Coles versus Bycombe. Huge, huge performance from him. How do you guys feel about this? I feel giddy every time Barnsley play. And I feel angry every time Barnsley play and it's not on ESPN Plus. And by the way, they play Betfield Wednesday on Saturday morning. It is on ESPN Plus, so you can watch it there. How do you feel?
Should we rename those tweets him come to, through? To Barrel BK? Just to get the knees in so he's a champion player?
No, no. He's dominating the champo, so he's true. A step above right now.
True.
Two goals, Doyle. Five now for Barnsley, who are just marching up that championship table. Like, they're rightfully probably dreaming about promotion at this point. It could all fall away, but why not dream?
I mean, they're in the promotion playoffs. I know. Now. They've taken 28 out of 30 points since he's been there. He's been a game changer for them. And a lot of it comes, and we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show, a lot of it comes because they play terrible soccer and hit a lot of long balls in the general vicinity of Daryl DK. And he is so strong and good in the air that he not just wins his fair share of those, but he drags the opposing, like multiple opposing defenders around, which gives his team a better chance to win those second balls. And then it's off to the races. And like, that is the strategy. And he has been a game changer, but he's also found a way to score some goals. A couple of them on set pieces, including the first one he scored yesterday. But then that second goal was so good because it was like a BWP goal. BWP scored probably like 30 goals for the Red Bulls. That was so similar to this because it was a recycled set piece, I think.
No, I think it was a throw from deeper.
A throw. You're right. It was a recycled throw, and the Wickham, I guess I have to say it with the B, Wickham, couldn't clear it all the way. And as they were pushing up, Barnsley sort of were playing actual soccer, and Daryl made this great run sort of across the box up and towards the ball to shift the opposing left center back out a little bit to create a little bit of a gap. And then once that gap happened, Daryl just drifted back post and then sprinted hard toward the spot. And it was a great cross, but it was a Riley Wright Phillips goal, much more about just being smarter than the defenders rather than being bigger and stronger and better at soccer. So it was, like, it was my favorite goal that he scored so far. And obviously, if you're an Orlando City fan, you're probably of two minds because, like, it's got to be a thrill to see this kid just dominating the championship. But it's also like, he's not coming back.
And Doyle, you know, anyone who's going to spend the number that is going to be spent on him, they're going to watch every minute he's ever played.
Yep.
They're going to dig through the stats. But just alone, those two goals, one was, I'm better than everyone else out here. Like the headed goal, no one even was off the ground by the time he's at full height. He's reading the game quicker, and then he's bigger and faster than and stronger than these players to get up and score it and finishes it calmly. And then the other, as you said, is reading the game, seeing the gaps, soft finish, good feet, understanding the moment.
And setting up defenders, like being smart enough to think two steps ahead to set up the defenders.
So if you took those two goals and sent them to someone, that's a complete player right there. And obviously, you're going to go out and do your full research, but these are the things he's putting himself out there for, where Tutelrahman tweeted out, and Tutelrahman does some of the best stuff on the internet about goals per 90 and the things that players in the championship have done. It is not odd for, and we talked about that $10 million and that bid the last time, it's not odd for strikers in the championship to go for larger numbers than that to the Premier League over the last 3-4 years. Some have been super successful, some haven't. DK's younger than almost every single one of those players. Mm-hmm. And his goals per 90 is either with there or above a ton of them. And so even you look, I think this year, it sounds like future Jamaican international, Ivan Toney, he's leading the whole thing, the whole division in goals. And his goals per 90 is just above what DK's been. So he is in that shop window where you're talking about $20 million signings from teams, you know, out of the championship for guys who are 24 and 25. And he still has more steps that he can go.
Yeah, it's wonderful to watch, even just to be on the roller coaster and also to see how much it clearly is a dream come true for Daryl. like having him on this show, and there's some interviews that we do that we do them and we enjoy them, but you kind of forget about them. That was one that we, I don't think, are ever going to forget about. Mm-hmm. And just sort of his enthusiasm, his positivity, his honesty, the way he was forthright about the way he came up in this game and maybe the opportunities he didn't have and the lack of sort of bitterness and, you know, sort of that negative side of it. It was all just like, this is in front of me. Everything is in front of me and I have to take advantage of it. And maybe if you're a team out there thinking about spending big on Daryl Dike, you're thinking, yeah, Barnsley don't play pretty soccer, but my God, what could this guy do if we did play pretty soccer? Look at all these things that he did on Orlando, or look at these sort of assets and abilities and skills that he have that are going underrepresented in this incredibly successful run. And oh, by the way, there is a ton of pressure. There's a lot of money on the line. Barnsley are trying to make a club-changing move here, and to have a guy from Major League Soccer come in at his age, and the U.S. national team, by the way, because he's called up, come in and be this sort of impact, I mean, it's just, it's delightful. As soon as I see those tweets when I can't watch the games or I'm monitoring on like the, you know, scoreboard on Google or whatever, and it's like Daryl Dike scored, I mean, it's like I need it. I have to have it. I have to see that highlight. I mean, I just want to celebrate it, and I don't want to pour any cold water here, but Woeful Out West, a.k.a. Hank in Salt Lake City, said, guys, I need your help. I see Dike thriving in England. All I can think is, quote, he's riding a totally unsustainable finishing hot streak going back to last year. He's averaging a goal every 1.5 shots on target. He's outperforming his XG. Regression to the mean is coming. In short, he says analytics has stolen his joy for the sport. Like, do you think about that at all, Doyle?
I tweeted about it. I tweeted about it after last game, I think. He's overperforming his expected goals by about 200%, which is probably unsustainable. Like he, if he's as good a goal scorer as it seems like he is right now, that breaks a lot of expected goals models. The caveat is that he just smacks the hell out of the ball when he shoots it. Like he just hits it so freaking hard, it forgets to spin. And if you look at guys who consistently beat their XG models, it's guys like Haaland. Kyle Larin did it. And those two guys were similar to Daryl in that they just hit the snot out of the ball. So the power he's able to generate probably accounts for a lot of it. One of the reasons why I loved that second goal so much from yesterday is that it was a Predators goal. It was the type of high quality chance, one touch finish from 8 yards in front of goal with no defenders really that close to you. Because again, you've set them up with your off the ball movement. Those are the types of high quality chances that he will need to find with regularity in order to be the type of irresistible goal scorer that, like, top, you know, is in the running for the golden boot. I mean, I mentioned Bradley Wright Phillips for a reason, right? Like, Bradley Wright Phillips almost never scored, you know, absolute blinders from 20 yards that he hit the hell out of. Bradley Wright Phillips has been all one touch finishes, almost all one touch finishes in the box. And then you look at a guy like Haaland. Haaland scores those very low percentage chances because he hits the ball so hard, but he also scores a ton of really high percentage chances. So I think our friend from, where was he? Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City, yeah.
Is correct to be a little bit worried about it. And that's why if I was Orlando City, I would be listening really hard to any offers right now because the sample size isn't too large. And on a larger sample size, like maybe he does start regressing to the mean. But there's an indication in his recent play and really some of his play last year that he is starting to find the types of chances that sustainable goal scoring are built from.
But Joel, isn't there also the space where he's not this goal scorer, but he does so much more. Runs the end line. If he's not scoring, he's irrelevant in the game, takes three touches in a game, scores one. And it was a good day, right? Like he's a player you can play through. He's an impact. And so there's so much more he can do, which would be my answer. My other answer to that would be, okay, maybe the goal scoring drops off. He still affects the game at a high level. He is still a central part of everything that's done. And so he can still be both effective and promising, even if he's not finishing at this rate or at the highest rate he possibly can.
The flip side is, you know, I know the models are sort of king and data is king, and you have all these different chances that are going into this, so don't try to beat it. But he's so young in his career.
I think Ian Dark would like you to explain to him who adds the unexpected goals.
Mm.
So keep that.
Well,
in mind.
The answer is Daryl DK, right?
I mean, the kid, he is in a lot of ways a kid. I mean, that's not to like minimize what he's done, but as far as professional career, he is like he's basically in his first year, essentially, mm-hmm. of actually playing professional soccer. Like Orlando City waited, and in hindsight, that looks really smart. We wondered about it at the time, but he had like the second half of last year, and then this. So we just don't know with Daryl DK in a lot of ways. Now, I just want to throw it out there because we can't spend too much on this every single show. We're turning into an FCC and Daryl DK podcast. I don't hate it, but I do want to just throw it out for you, the Daryl DK watch for the next month. As I said on Saturday, ESPN Plus, Betfield Wednesday, then betting on the 2nd, Buttontown on the 5th, Biddlesbrough on the 5th, Boventry on the 17th, and Buttersfield on the 21st.
This
so,
is the biggest dad move Weeby's
I
made.
I love it, man. I just
time.
Can't help it. It just makes
took
me laugh
a joke
every
and
single time.
Slammed it into the ground.
Yeah. I think this joke is about like 15% as funny as Weeby thinks it is.
Is it?
I
is
would
it
agree.
Bad?
Now, here's an actual B. Bright DK, of course, his brother. I got deep into African players in MLS because we had a conversation for something we're going to do in December. So I spent 2 hours on it. 2 appearances for Nigeria, 1 goal. Do you know who he scored against?
It was, one of the bigger European teams, right?
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
Italy. Is Italy.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's yeah. the legend that you have to follow. Sister all played right. in the World Cup. Big time family.
I usually ignore Anders, but I'm not going to this time. He says move on, and now we're to the producer and Anders reminder of the day, so it's good timing. We do have a new show coming. You said something in December. We have a new show coming. It will be released as a podcast and on YouTube per normal. Clubbing Country is back under the Extra Time banner and Continental Tire banner. We're recording that first episode after the 2-game international window for the U.S. national team. So it'll probably come out, you know, week of the 29th sometime. Basically summing up what happened in those games, got some good interviews for you, looking around Major League Soccer, setting the states from an international perspective for the year. We're happy to do that every single month. Ecstatic even. It gives us a lot more time to dig in. Let's talk about that U.S. national team roster now, though. March 25th against Jamaica, March 28th against Northern Ireland, both those games in Europe. There are 26 players called in. You've got Brooks, Cannon, Richards, Adams, Reyna, Sargent, and Wea all leaving after that first game for quarantine reasons. That still leaves a good roster back behind for that Northern Ireland game. But I want your reaction here, Doyle, as people maybe go refresh themselves with the exact names on the roster at MLSsoccer.com. What are you thinking as you see Greg Berhalter's most recent group?
The first thing that jumped out at me was like, this is going to be our first chance to see Christian Pulisic in a year and a half, almost. Well, the last time we saw Christian Pulisic was that 2-0 loss to Canada in the Nations League way back in October of 2019. And we're not just going to see him. We're going to see him with something pretty close to what we all think is the first choice 11, other than Weston McKennie, who was given this camp off because he's been nursing a hip injury. So I'm pretty stoked about that. Pulisic has had a struggle of a year with Chelsea. He does seem to be settling into a super sub role, which I am completely fine with. Like if you're an attacking sub, an attacking super sub for a top 3 team in the Premier League, a top 8 team in the world, that is fine. You do not need to be playing every single week, but we do need to see him start getting more reps with this first team, especially because the way the US plays, especially defensively, has changed in the past year and a half. They press more. The wingers come inside and become more playmakers rather than out wide and trying to beat guys off the dribble. And so it's different, and that is the big takeaway for me. Obviously, I'm excited to see Chris Richards as well. We did see him last camp, but now he's a regular starter in the Bundesliga, which is a huge box to check. Brennan Aaronson's another interesting one because there aren't a lot of wingers here. And I've always thought that Brendan Aaronson was better out wide, or out wide's not necessarily – Brendan Aaronson has always been better when his responsibilities are more linear, when he can just push the opposing line back, you know, go between the lines rather than have to, like, interpret space and control the tempo. That's when Brendan Aaronson's at his best, and that's kind of the role he's playing now for Jesse Marsh out wide – in a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-2-2. And I think that's very similar to the winger role for Greg Berhalter's national team. So I think we're going to get to see that as well. And then the other takeaway is, like, just with the way the team's constructed, we might see kind of a 3-6-1 in the second game. Something where there's no true defensive midfielder, something where it's two guys sort of like sharing the job. And we've tried it before under Berhalter and it stunk, but that doesn't mean it's not worth trying again. Specifically because you need more than one club in your bag if you're going to get through World Cup qualifying. And, like, what happens if Tyler Adams isn't available? Do it, like, Jackson Ewell can do that on his own against some teams, but, like, what if we don't have Tyler Adams from Mexico? You're not going to play Jackson Ewell as a lone D-mid versus Mexico. So we're going to see, I think, some wrinkles in that second game. I'm excited about all of that, even though I am sort of bracing myself for the fact that it's not going to be pretty.
Can I ask you this, Dave? What do you think Greg Berhalter wants to get out of these games? Because I put out my, I would like to see this 11 on Twitter via the Extra Time account, and we can slag that
weird,
later if we want.
ETR's boy, Dal DK, was not in that 11.
He wasn't, but I want to get him. Give him the start in the second game, man.
Yeah,
some guys
fair.
Are going Sargent home. Some guys are going home. We give Sargent his chance. He's been scoring goals. What should Greg want to get out of this particular camp? Because this is it before Nations League.
Yeah,
so, like,
I think for him, it's building culture is one, right? And we've heard so much already, a lot of it with Yunus Musa, of the group getting together for the first time in forever. And for some guys, the first time they've ever met with the Wales-Panama game, and then how much it's meant and how much they've stayed in touch and all those things going forward. And then I think, to Doyle's point, we saw them finally put everything together versus Wales, where we'd been so excited, but none of them had gotten on the field together. And there was good moments, but it wasn't the exact performance we wanted. And Panama was a bit of a different game. So I think you're looking for a more cohesive performance in this first game from this group, where a lot of players will know their roles better. They'll have talked over the last few months about what they need to do, how the system works, what they can bring to that system. And so can you do it on the front foot against Ireland and finish and create some opportunities? And so I think it's just that slow progression, that next step. But you have so many pieces in here that are going to be starting in that Nations League or the Gold Cup, whichever one is considered more important. It seems like the Nations League
because of timing.
And
right?
I think also
you could get the whole team in for Nations League, and you have them there for a couple of weeks. It's after the European season, and it doesn't cut into their preseason.
Right.
And honestly, it doesn't cut into their downtime. So these guys will need rest.
And we talked about this when we had Greg Berhalter on. The focus is World Cup qualifying.
Yeah.
So getting ready for a month-long tournament is not the focus. The three-game window that they're going to make with a friendly and around the Nations League, that is more what they're preparing for. So it seems like that will be what they're doing. So that's the next step, right? Because this is the last time he's going to see all those players until then. And I think it's exciting. I think it's exciting when this roster comes out, that it's like, yup, he's here, he's here, he's here, where we haven't had that in a while of this is the first team, this is the first group. And one of the other ones that's interesting is now that Musa's in, you don't have to, and I don't want to say that they did anything wrong, you're not appealing to him anymore. So now we're going to start to see how will he be used, because maybe there was the idea in the last camp, let's put him in central midfield, let's make him get a lot of touches, let's make him enjoy it. And now it's, what does he do for this team going forward? And he's going to be huge for this national team because of, I think, one, his versatility and his ability to affect the game in a lot of ways from a lot of different places, especially with the pieces the U.S. has, because Doyle talked about all these, you know, different players. There's a lot of versatility. And so there's a lot of guys who can do a few different things. Then you've got a couple specialists. So it'll be interesting to see who everything is built around over the next 6 months.
It feels to me like Musa works really well as one of those 2-8s.
Yeah,
and
I don't think he's a winger at all.
Yeah, I think that's where he's at. And I think if Weston's here, you would see the Musa Adams Weston midfield. And we haven't seen, we just haven't seen like these guys together all that much. Jamie Hill tweeted this out. He does a great job with this stuff. Pulisic, McKinney, and Adams. His number is that they have 76 minutes together all time. I mean, that's what Greg Berhalter, I think, in this camp and in the Nations League is trying to address ahead of World Cup qualifying. Here's the 11 I would throw out against Jamaica, and I don't have Gio Reyna in it. So if you guys don't agree with that, feel free to get at me after this. I have Stefan in goal. I have Dest at right back because I still think that Dest's primary position and his abilities, you need to find a solution to let him be there. So I'd have him at right back. I'd have Richards. I'd have Brooks in the middle. And I'd have Robinson at left back. Give him reps. See if he's making jumps forward. See if it can work. I know defensive cover might be an issue, but that's why I have Tyler Adams at defensive midfield and Musa and Legette for me in front of him. I know people get mad about this. My God, my mentions, the Gio Reyna hive is very, very, very strong. They accuse me of hating Gio Reyna. I accuse them of not seeing the world for what it is, which is a world where Sebastian Legette can do a hell of a job for Greg Berhalter, has proven it and might be a better option. In fact, I think a better option in must-win games right now than Gio Reyna is. Tim Way on the right wing, Sargent up top, Pulisic on the left. A lot of that is, hey, these guys are going to be leaving, so they got to start. I personally just don't think that Gio Reyna has to start. I think he's an incredible weapon off the bench. And I just think Sebastian Legette has proven to Greg Berhalter that he can do all the things that he needs to do and is at times a game changer in that position.
But so, we have talked about for months that there is a difference between playing El Salvador at home and Mexico on the road. And the U.S. needs to have different pieces for all of that. And I would say Gio Reyna hasn't been starting for Dortmund. And so I wouldn't say that he has to start in this game. But going forward, your best attacking team has Gio Reyna in it. And there will be times when that is the group that you do need to use or should use
I don't
for some matchups.
Can I ask this, though? I know that you don't, Doyle. Can I ask this? I don't actually think Gio Reyna for Legette would be the move. I think it would be Gio Reyna for Wea.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I don't disagree with that. But also, when you have all your best players, that's a different conversation than that. And that's why I say, does Yunus Musa work there? Because it just gets you more of the pieces you want on the field in more comfortable positions going forward. In a game like that, if you can start Reyna in the middle with Weston and Tyler because you know you're going to dominate the ball, does Musa start out wide or does Brendan Aaronson start out wide? Now, they don't have to stay there. It's not most of what they're going to do, but that's how you're getting everyone on the field.
I understand what you're saying, Gasman, but I kind of disagree with some of your rationale. But in the end, it's all moo. I think the guys who have to leave after the first game are going to start the first game. And that probably means Cannon at right back and Dest at left back instead of Anthony Robinson at left back and Cannon at right back. It certainly means Brooks and Richards. And it means Gio Reyna is going to start somewhere. He hasn't been starting for Dortmund. He hasn't been productive for Dortmund. He had two or three goals and four assists in his first six games. And he's had like two goals and one assist in his subsequent 27. They've been playing him a little bit in central midfield, a little bit on the wing. He hasn't been productive in either spot. That's fine. He's 18. He's a talent. I'm with Weeby. If we had a must-win game tomorrow, he probably doesn't start. But this is not a must-win game. This is a friendly, and this is a chance to get reps with the first team, and he's clearly on the track of being a first teamer. So let's see, like, whether it's at wing in place of Wea or whether it's in central midfield where we didn't see him last time as one of those free eights in place of Legette. We're going to see him from the whistle at one of those two spots.
And I'm fine with that. And you're probably right. I tweeted that. I said, look, I'm probably wrong about this, but in my mind,
Wea
again,
is also leaving.
Okay. Then my guess is that
it'll be at the eight.
We'll see. Yeah. And let's see him there. I think he's played more often there for Dortmund than
he's been
played
better
on the
out of the middle, I would say.
So yeah,
he hasn't been great at either, look, but out of the middle, he can kind of have more runners off him to make decisions and slip passes where
that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. But he knows where those spaces are. It's just releasing the ball at the right time.
Yeah.
But I'd rather put him there than out wide where you saw in the Wales and whatever game, he's not comfortable running at guys with a ton of space. That's not where he's at his best. So I wouldn't try and find those opportunities for him.
And this is probably all moot when Weston McKennie's there anyway, because Weston McKennie will just play there and Sebastian Legette won't. But my thing is, it's all about World Cup qualifying and it's about the Nations League. Figure out who can win you games.
Start out in there,
my
God. We'll get to that later. Okay, that's a good reminder. Season preview time. Let's go. Let us know what you think about the U.S. national team. We'll talk a lot more about that leading into those two games. We will also, of course, have that Club and Country presented by Continental Tire coming after a full podcast just about national team stuff, bunch of mail, interviews, whatever you want to be in that show can be in that show. So hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. It is the season preview time. We're doing four teams. We're doing Real Salt Lake. We are doing the Seattle Sounders, DC United, and Toronto FC today. Here is the producer Anders bonus reminder. Let's see. Quote, it's 10 to 12 minutes per team, Weeby. 10 period, 2 period, 12 period, minutes period. Okay, I'll try to stick to that, Anders. Here we go. Real Salt Lake, their 2021 season stakes in a haiku. Who'll take ownership of the club and on the field? Who's here for RSL?
I thought they were supposed to be 2020 review haiku.
No. I changed them. You weren't paying attention last time. We don't want to look back. We want to look forward. Okay. 2020 is so strange. And
it sounds like Weeby couldn't figure out how to write that haiku.
I was super skeptical of that, but then you really brought it home with that last line. That was weird.
You like that? Who's here for RSL? Yeah. Do you believe? That's the question about this year. Who believes? Who believes enough to purchase the club and take them into the next stage of life, whatever that may be? And who believes among this squad and in this team? I mean, we talked to Tony Beltran, and you kind of heard, is trauma the right word? Kind of is. You kind of heard the trauma of the last year internally for Real Salt Lake. And it's not just the last year. We know based on all the reports that it is longer than that. So that's kind of what this year is trying to grapple with and push past that trauma. They haven't made a bunch of big signings. We knew they wouldn't, but can Freddie get together and like band together into something and do it as underdogs? That's really what it's about. And in the process, does somebody step up and take them into the next stage of life as a new owner? Key signings, they've got some. Anderson Julio came in. Ecuadorian kid was at San Luis in Mexico. They'd wanted him before San Luis got him, but they picked him up on loan, I believe, here. Rubio Rubin is in. Bobby Wood is what we keep hearing for the summer, though I still don't think that's confirmed, but it's basically confirmed. And then they got some homegrowns in. Anybody you like on their key signings, or how do you feel about the state of the roster, Doyle?
I'm not here for RSL. they played some pretty brutal soccer last year, and I think the most discouraging thing was none of the young players got better. In fact, you could argue a lot of them got worse. Anderson Julio looks like, he has a profile of a guy who might be a starter in this league. He's not a sure thing, and he's not, I would be surprised if he was like an all-star level, let alone like best 11 or something even better than that.
I was just thinking give me 5 and 5 and we're good,
Yeah. Rubio Rubin is an interesting reclamation project. He's never he's a former U.S. youth net, and I think he has like a half dozen
national team.
And he scored for fun at the youth levels in DA, but never translated it at the professional level anywhere, even in Holland, even in the second division of Mexico. Then he started playing for Landon Donovan in San Diego in the USL last year, and he was just banging in goals left and right. So he's 24, 25 years old. He seems like the exact type of USL player you'd want to take a flyer on. But this is a team that didn't make the playoffs last year, and they lost their identity in terms of being a team that develops and plays their kids. They lost for the second year in a row a legend in Kyle Beckerman. Last year it was Nick Raimondo. And it's hard to point to a single spot where you're like, this team relative to the rest of the Western Conference is stronger than almost anyone. Other than, right back.
Aaron Herrera. Right back, Aaron Herrera.
So Doyle, let me try and bring a little bit of light to you, or whatever it is, which is, for all of the off-field things that went wrong with RSL, one of the other issues of their top-down leadership was a win-now mentality with a group that was not capable of winning. And now you have a team that I think has an understanding of who they are and where they stand. And does that give Freddy Juarez the space to play kids and develop players, because they all know where this roster's at in terms of the rest of the league? That's my hope for 2021 with them. They had this like unnecessary, we have to try and win everything. I mean, they were going out and there's nothing wrong with it, but they were trying to win the USL championship rather than develop guys. Like, there was no reason for that. And now I think we talked to Tony Beltran, you hear from LA Fall all the way down, an understanding of where this club stands. So now you have the space to play homegrowns, to give players the opportunities maybe to find their feet and make mistakes, because that's what your club's going to be built around, and that's what your identity should be.
So here's your 2222 player spotlight. Does that mean they have to actually play Jason Ramirez? I mean, it, very likely it's a hefty portion of the fault for Jason Ramirez not playing falls on Jason Ramirez and you know, some questions about whether he was ready physically and mentally for it. And that's fair, and I don't fault the kid at all in a pandemic season coming in to a new environment in a club that's in complete disarray in a lot of ways organizationally and just it not happening for him. But he was, I believe, a young DP.
Yeah.
Was Jason Ramirez. I mean, that was a bet. That was a big bet. So he is the 2222 player to watch. And I would add more on this, but I haven't seen Jason Ramirez play. So I'm not sure what he's going to be. I think that's a huge question for this year. We have seen Albert Rusnak play. He's the star spotlight. He's probably going to go to the Euros this summer. TBD. Seems to be a lot of questions about the Euros too right now. But is he the star? Who is the star?
I mean, it's got... yeah, right. It's got to be Albert Rusnak. He's the DP number 10, and we've seen him have some really good moments in the past. I'm not the biggest fan of his, but like we know he can occasionally be a match winner. If he gets it going well, that will help. I do think that the team does need to be a little bit of the star, though. Like the team has to be bigger than the sum of its parts, and they haven't been that in RSL for a while now.
Do you think that this back four or five could be, if Justin Gladnow with a full contract settled and confident, Donny Toya's not a high level left back, but he's an MLS starter at the spot, and Marcelo Silva has some experience, that they could be a rock for this team? Any of you? Either of you? No? Okay. No takers?
Their number is like the on off splits with Justin Glad over the past 4 years are absurd. Like they have been so much better with Justin Glad on the field, but Freddy Juarez benched Justin Glad repeatedly in big games last 2 years. And Mike Pecky had done the same thing the couple of years before that, like down the stretch as they were. So I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if they, like, I know they gave him a contract, but like neither of the past two coaches have really seen him as something to build upon. Marcelo Silva is like a replacement level center back. Herrera's really, really good, but to the point where they might get an offer that they have to take. You know, Donny Toya's pretty good, but like this is not, unless something changes, it's hard to see this being a team that can defend really well and still attack at the same time. It's almost like they have to choose one or the other. And if they decide to defend well, that means like last year, they're not going to be able to attack. And if they decide they want to open up and attack well, they might not have the horses to do that and defend.
How about this horse, Bobby Wood? Here's the question, our mailbag question. Hangry Hippo hits us up and says, how many goals will Bobby Wood score when he becomes official? How effective will Bobby Wood be?
I'm not brave enough to answer that one.
We also don't know how many we don't know when he'll come, and so how many games he'll play.
In the summer, you know, after the season's over, after right. he gets that bag.
So let's say he comes, 12 games into the year? That's what kind of what
we
think it'll
be. Yeah, because the season's starting later. Let's say that. And then he has 22-ish. He's got fresh legs. You'll know that.
So I'll say 21 goals.
A goal. Yeah, right. A goal every other game. Are you going over or are you going under?
I would have gone under on that one. I would have said like one every three.
So you're saying 12 and a half is for the season? That's what that number is? With the
yeah, so I would have gone under on that one. I would say like in the 8 to 10 range. And I don't think that would be bad. I think that would be pretty good production.
It'll be tough too because Douglas Martinez.
He's not going to play 24 games. Like, but the way the schedule is sort of backloaded and his injury history, you're not going to play him, you know, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, week after week.
Give me 8 goals, Doyle. Give me 8 goals. I'm coming out here right now. 8 to 10 goals for Bobby Wood.
Nice.
Okay. I'll be the hopeful one. I'm here for RSL. Stand up on your feet. Shout out loud. Real. All right. This is fine meme, the big weakness, concern, pitfall. What's the fire surrounding the dog drinking coffee in this case? Everything. We've already talked about it, right? Like,
It's just there.
Yeah, the uncertainty of the organization itself.
Because I don't think we should do the fire meme because it's just
it's
reality.
Cruel. It's cruel. Yeah,
it's not as much fun when it's real. But the other side, the give you the pitches.
Yes.
And I think I did it for what was the teams we did last week where someone would be scrappy? Whatever. I've said it about Montreal a bunch, but it's a group there. Everyone questions them. Freddy Juarez gets everyone on the same page. They're scrappy. They're competitive. And for the people in that market, I think, one, we can go to games and everything works out. They will respect that style and that group and support them. And it's one of the best atmospheres for an MLS game in the league. And it's one of the best markets for an MLS team in the league in terms of energy and relevance when they have big games or when they have games. I think all of that can happen with this group. That doesn't mean they're going to be an MLS Cup contender. It may not even mean they're in the playoffs, but I think it could be an enjoyable 2021 for their fan base.
Yeah, I think us against the world has to be the rallying call here. Like, you know, insular. Like, it's just look at each other and play for each other and hope that it works out and hope that you're coherent in the way that you want to play. All right, here is the prediction time. My prediction is they're not going to make the playoffs. The odds, the talent gap is just far, far too large. So my hope for RSL is right where you're at, Dave. I hope that they go out and they're just like, screw it. Nobody expects anything of us. You know, we're trying to find some sort of stability just as a club. Let's just do this for ourselves. And they have a lot of guys who are sort of like reclamation projects, as we've said. And a lot of guys like Herrera, they're just sort of like grit your teeth and I'm going to mess somebody up. I like that. And I hope that it works out for them in a way that they can do themselves proud. But I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I am also there.
Okay, well, we'll end that there. But Real Salt Lake, stand up on your feet, all right? We're here for you, all right? Here we go. Seattle Sounders, the 2021 season stakes in a haiku. Dynasty, new goals. Stay at the top, Sans Morris. They invented this. Invented being in the playoffs. Invented being competitive. That's what it's about. Steve Zakuani says they got worse this offseason, but for the Sounders, worse is still better than most teams. So they still got Ladero, they still got Rui Diaz, they still got Roldan, they still got Steph Fry, they still got a good center back pairing, and they still have a better team than most teams, even without Jordan Morris, even without making big signings this offseason. So for Seattle, it's just about doing what they always do, which is keeping that standard high. They might not be a supporters shield team, they might not get back to MLS Cup, but they are going to be certainly in the upper echelon of Major League Soccer, and that's what 2021 should be all about for them. The big signings here, Jao Paulo, permanent deal for him. Kellen Rowe, he's back home, baby. Freddie Montero, same for him. The legend returns. I'm reading straight off the rundown, and Anders definitely put that one in. What do you think about the haiku, Doyle, and the signings, and what 2021 means for this club?
Not your best haiku. The signings are kind of funny because they brought in Kellen Rowe, Spencer Ritchie, and Freddie Montero. That's all they've done this offseason. Kellen Rowe and Spencer Ritchie are from Seattle.
Freddie Montero's in Seattle.
Yeah, but Seattle, look, you know what? The dog park is going to be legendary this year.
Clearly.
It's going to be legendary.
But, I mean, that's part of what they've done really well is brought in guys who want to be there and don't rock the boat. And everybody knows it's Ladero's team and Rui Diaz's team and everybody, like, and even as great as Jordan Morris was, you saw him, like, he would defer to those guys as well, and that's not going to change with or without him, and with or without these newcomers. What might change is the formation. Like, I suspect that Brian Schmetzer is delighted to have Freddie Montero because it means he can start Montero and Rui Diaz up top in a 4-4-2, and you play Ladero inverted on the right, and you play Rowe inverted on the left, and Roldan and Jao Paulo in central midfield, and then you don't have to play any of the kids because he's not been a coach who develops young players. He's just not really in his bag, and this gives him a lot of good veterans as their primary look, and I don't think it's going to be enough to make the Sounders a championship team. But we all know the Sounders don't make their moves until the summer anyway. Yeah. So, like, it's almost like, okay, is this going to be good enough to keep their head above water for the first 3 months of the season? Yes. All right. Then let's table all further discussion until the summer transfer window.
And in that way, it's perfect for the Sounders because you are going to have, as you said, just by function of the season starting April 16th, a backloaded schedule.
Right.
Like, we're going to get to that summer transfer window much quicker and with fewer games to sort of see what's up but also drop points than in normal years. Yeah. So the Sounders, I mean, in a lot of ways it's like, yeah, this is who we are now, but you know how we do this. We'll be somebody different in October.
And I would say it's rare for us in these conversations to say we trust an MLS team of what they're going to do, but you know, with Seattle, and I'd say Toronto's in that territory as well. So two of the teams we're going to talk about today, you're not worried about where they're at in March, April, and May. You know that they'll figure themselves out in September and October and be ready to play. And Doyle, I was actually surprised. Again, I'm an amateur at this, don't know what I'm doing, but playing on the second spectrum numbers, Freddie Montero's creative numbers are actually better than I realized. And a lot of that was with Cavallini, which fits into what he would be asked to do here. He's not going to stretch the back line. He's not that speed option. Can you drop in underneath? And can you play that final ball off to Rui Diaz as he splits center backs or gets into the channels and all those things, which, as you said, you already know Brian Schmetzer likes him and he wants him and he likes experienced players and developed players. And I think that fits pretty well with him. And if it's not him, it's just Will Bruin and they're just smashing people up front. Right. And you're just using those wing backs to get forward and throw balls in. And if it drops because Will Bruin runs through someone, then Rui Diaz pounces on it. And if it doesn't, Will Bruin meets it in the air. And that's kind of what it's going to be for Seattle the first few months. And it probably works out that you don't have crowds. Like, there's not an atmosphere where there's an expectation of a style of play for those first few months. And then, as we've said, you start to find what this team really is going through the summer.
Is it a bad omen that the siren rolled through right as we were guaranteeing basically that they were going to go make a big move in the summer? Like, is that a bad omen? We're big on omens here, and I don't know if that's a good omen.
It does feel like things are a little more tenuous than they have been in a long time for Seattle because, losing Leerdam hurts. Obviously, losing Morris hurts.
Svensson.
He won them games by himself, Jordan Morris did, but Svensson is the big one. Gustav Svensson in 2019, I would argue, when he was available, he was the best defensive midfielder in the league. And he also functioned as a backup center back as well. And like, that guy was such a great safety blanket for half a decade almost. And they have not replaced him. I assume they're going to. But even for a team that's generally as shrewd with their signings as Seattle are, it's not going to be easy. So it does feel, and all of this is taken with like that center back trio that they have of Andrade, Arriaga, and Shane O'Neill. They're good. They showed that they were good in getting all the way to MLS Cup, but this isn't prime Chad Marshall and Roman Torres from 4 years ago.
Or Kim Keehee and Marshall, yeah.
So that's the one place where if they're going to be quote-unquote better, which they won't be because they've lost Jordan Morris, is if Xavier Arriaga becomes something close to the player that he was brought into. If he's a confident ball-playing center back who doesn't make massive mistakes over the course of the first half of this season, I think that's the biggest wrinkle that could happen for this team to say, okay, we're really excited about what we have because they'll bring in a Tam Winger and that will improve them. And the spine is what it is. But I think that's the one spot where in that group where you could say, could they be better than they were last year? And it pretty much all falls on his individual development and progression.
Yeah, man. Just play the way you dress because he dresses well. I got to tell you. Xavier Arriaga, I'm jealous of the cut. Still looking for a barber here. I'm going to have to ask him who he's got out in Seattle. Maybe get a trip. How about 2022 spotlight? We talked about Schmetz has not been. I don't want to like brand Brian Schmetzer, but certainly has not been something that we've talked about a ton with him in the past, developing young players. When I say young, I mean basically not experienced professionals. Yeah. Anders, again, he's the Seattle Sounders, drum beat to the rundown meetings and the private chat here. Ethan Doblier, he really wants him to be good. Danny Leyva, he wants him to be there. Hobiak could be in. Who, if anyone?
So I just think with Schmetzer, he did aggressively push Danny Leyva into the first team. And then Leyva got hurt for like 14 months. So I think if Leyva's healthy this year, which is from what I've heard he is, he will get opportunities, especially if it's that diamond. Because he can kind of fit anywhere.
I don't think it would be a diamond. I think he would be one of the two deep-lying central midfielders in either a 4-4-2 that's flat or like a 4-2-3-1. The thing with Leyva, though, and like his vision is really good. He turns on the ball really well. He grew like 3 inches, and it changed his gait. and he runs really, really weird now. And he might be one of those guys who, like, we've seen it with great young players who their body changes a little bit and it's never really quite the same. So I'm really interested in seeing minutes for Danny Leyva. The other one is Josh Atencio, who is a couple years older. And he's a left-footed. They've used him as a defensive midfielder. They've used him some as a center back. I think he's going to have to be a center back. He might be the fourth center back on that roster right now. I think he probably is a fourth center back on that roster.
So
there are three guys in Davalar, Leyva, and Atencio. I could see, like, there's a world in which any of the three break through, but there's also, I think, a more realistic world where none of them actually do this year.
So Atencio's played center back with the U.S. youth teams, and I know a lot of people project him there. Everything I've heard is out of Seattle is they still think he's a central midfielder, and they like what they've seen from him. So that I see Doyle's point of view, and it's something we've heard a lot so far, but it seems like they still see him as an opportunity to be an MLS central midfielder. But those are the three that have opportunities. Anytime they do play with a winger, Dablier is like the only guy right now. And so he will get opportunities. And I think his mentality, the way he plays, fits a Schmetzer style team, which is grind it out, do whatever you have to do, give your body up, all those cliche things. He fits into for what Seattle's
going to
do.
That's how you make MLS Cup, David.
Boom.
Hey, the fire.
4 times in 5 years. I don't know if you heard.
Almost the dynasty. The four time, the fire surrounding this coffee drinking dog is probably that they start slow, maybe, and then they don't make the signing in the summer. But to be honest with you, this is a playoff team to me, no doubt about it. Still, we didn't even talk about stars because it's Ladero and Rui Diaz, and maybe we can mix that into the predictions here. What is the prediction that you have? And we'll start with you, Dave, since I cut you off.
No, it's fine. I think you're looking at like a fifth place team in the West because you're looking at Rui Diaz missing a month and a half. You don't know how much you're going to miss Roldan for U.S. national team stuff. Arriaga with Copa America as well. I don't know if Yaimar is going to get called in and what he's doing. But this is a team with no depth, with great, you know, high-end talent and spine. And so when you're missing those guys, it's tough to see them get a ton of results. So this is a group that I think probably doesn't host a playoff game this year, but also is an MLS Cup favorite going into the postseason.
It feels like this year is going to be a step backwards. They'll still make the playoffs, but I don't think we're going to consider them to be favorites going into the postseason, which is, that's significant because it'll be like the first time since 2016, which of course they won it, that we don't have them at that level. But it does feel like this team is due for like a step backwards and a reboot.
Didn't we do this in 2018 and then they rolled off like 45 points in 10 games or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with this. I feel like we're overthinking this a little bit. When you have Ladero and Rui Diaz and Roldan and the spine that they do, I think the center backs are going to be fine. And obviously, Steph Fry is a game changer. And you've been together for this many years and have this much success and a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth after you basically, you know, choked it out in MLS Cup. We'll just say that. I think they're going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 in the West, coming to the playoffs. Nobody's going to want to play them. Prime for a run. That's just my opinion. Garth Lagerwey is not going to mess around. You heard on this show how frustrated he was about that MLS Cup loss and that loss of opportunity. He's going to do everything in his power to make sure this summer gets them back to that point. I think because you still are in a window with Ladero and Rui Diaz. Those two are like generational players for clubs in this league, and I still think that they're going to be really, really good. On to DC United we go, though. Here is your haiku. Save your criticism. It's not my favorite, but, you know, try to lower expectations before I throw it out there. Benny, legend. But it's time to get vertical. Can Hernan get more? In a lot of ways, it's the same team. Not a lot of change here for DC United. We talked a lot about last year how much we liked the roster, liked what we thought they were going to be, liked their potential, didn't like what actually happened, and obviously that led to a big, decade. I'm not going to say decade in the making, just there was a decade of continuity there with Ben Olsen, and it was time to make a change. I think Benny felt that, and the club felt that, and they went out and got Hernan Losada, and it looks like an amazing hire. All the optics of it are just so encouraging. It has got to be so fun to be a DC United fan this preseason as Hernan Losada gets mic'd up and is just like really seeming to vibe with his guys and connect. And obviously they're not showing you the moments when he's frustrated. He's only happy that Griffin Yao is banging in goals. And so is Flores, But like Hernan Losada feels like this breath of fresh air that DC United as an institution needed. Just like a little bit of a change, a new face, an innovative guy, somebody who's got a ton of energy. And I'm also here for him posting inane parts of his life on Instagram stories. Like if you want to see what coffee Hernan Losada is drinking, he will literally show you. Like it's all pointless, but I want that behind the scenes. It just feels like there's energy with DC United. I'm just not exactly sure what that energy is going to be translated into on the field results wise.
Yeah, there's energy and there's talent. Again, this was a roster we liked. There's a lot of pieces that are good. There's not one high-end player that's going to carry you or, you know, can do the things maybe a Reynoso can do or a Nico Lodero. I think Edison Flores.
Wait a minute. I mean, Flores did that for Monarcas Morelia a couple of years
ago. Yeah, and I think he can be – I would – okay. Zeller Ayon, we're going to get into the tens conversation. I'm in that in my head. I don't know that Zeller Ayon did the things that Lodero and Reynoso do individually by himself, and he was a fantastic signing. Flores can be that. He can mm-hmm. be a legitimate game changer. He can be a match winner. There's a level of carrying a team by yourself that I don't think he's going to do. And I don't think DC needs it or wants it. But you look across this roster and you're comfortable with the starters in pretty much every position. And you're looking at four, five, six guys who you didn't get anything out of last year that should be high level players. I mean, you're talking about Julian Gressel, who was one of the best, you know, play or assist men in this league. And you got zero from last year. And then you look in central midfield with Canals and Moreno. You look at Flores. You look at Ola Kamara. And then whatever other 18 Argentines are going to come in, whether it's Lucas Rodriguez or Yamil Assad or someone from 2013 that they find to pull back in. All of these players are players that can be effective and match winners in this league. And I think what you look at with Losada, and you mentioned it, energy of just having a focus. How are you going to win games? Setting up in a way in which you're going to dictate the way games are played, which DC hasn't done. I don't have an endpoint on that date. DC hasn't done in a while. And I think for that fan base and this group of players, all of that is a fresh start, which means for players who have underperformed, you feel the opportunity that exists now because everything's new and you can prove yourself and you can win back minutes, win an opportunity, improve your the view of you, get back into national teams, whatever it is. And all those players, I think, sense that.
I think that's the star spotlight there on Edison Flores. We hit that one. You have anything to add there, Doyle? And maybe part of this is the tactical side, because we're talking about that verticality, that energy. If you see those sort of behind the scenes videos that DC is putting out, for Hernan Losada, it's like, don't play that ball back. Don't waste these moments. Don't waste getting in between lines. Go, 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 go to goal. What are we going to see from this team as far as just on the field?
I actually been thinking about how Jesse Marsh's RB Salzburg team plays, and like, it's always on. Like, there's, like most soccer teams is like, they take that forward touch and they look and like, it's not on and we'll recycle. Marsh's RB Salzburg team, like they take that first touch, play it back, and the guy who played it back then takes off vertically because it's always on. That's the whole point of the system. And just from watching those preseason clips and hearing Hernan Losada talk and from hearing some whispers from DC United camp, like that is what they're going for. Now, it's not going to be as kind of like ruthlessly and just, you know, balls out high pressing that we've seen from Jesse Marsh's teams in the past. But I think the idea is going to be that they are going to get vertical with every single touch, that everybody's expected to do it, all the way back to the defenders to a degree. And I do think that suits this team because, like, Ola Kamara is better in transition. Jordi Reyna, if you're going to get anything out of him, it's going to be in transition. We know that, I mean, Gressel can be absolutely devastating with his crossing in transition. And certainly Flores played that way for Monarcas when he was amazing in Liga MX a couple of years ago. So it kind of fits. I think it is going to be less about the new pieces than it is about Losada getting more out of the pieces who are already there. Up to and including maybe some of the kids like Griffin Yao, Moses Nyman, and Kevin Paredes.
Beautiful transition. Our 22 right? under 22 players to watch. Griffin Yao could be one.
Griff.
Moses Nyman would be mine. Where are you guys looking on this roster? If you're looking for big steps forward, Dave, who's the guy that you would bet on?
I would say Griffin Gao just because, and we talked with Losada right when he got the job. He'd watched tape. He was excited about Nyman and what he could do. But in terms of the responsibility those positions are going to have, and now you're bringing Russell Knauss, who is a central midfielder, back into his position. I don't know how many minutes are going to be there for Paredes and Nyman, and I think Griffin Gao is going to be a good wild card of an attacking player. Can play as the second forward, can play a little out wide, number 10, whatever it is, off the bench, getting opportunities. And so I think he's going to slot in pretty well into what Losada wants. And Losada knows in the conversations that he had in getting hired that this wants to be a team that develops players and sells them. And so there is a level of responsibility to showcase these young players. And so I think Yao is the one that they're going to continue to try and develop and push forward.
All right. Mailbag question. This one's coming in from Andrew_Weeby on Twitter. We didn't get one on DC, but I have this question. What is Julian Gressel going to be this year, Doyle? Because a lot of what I've seen in those, again, we keep going, like, it's like, you know, we're wandering in the desert. No, I'm just kidding. But we don't have much to go on here. But a lot of what we've seen in those videos is the desire to get it wide early and then play that like whipped ball in across the box, whether on the ground or in the air, to players that are, as we said, crashing on goal, going vertical on it, and having a back line that's running backwards with you. Julian Gressel, as we said, seems like a great guy to do that. If you can find him in those transition moments with his head up in some space, he will put it on people. Get back to an Atlanta Gressel? Or
he was devastating doing exactly that for Tata Martino. And like, it's a big reason why Julian Gressel was traded for as much as he was and was paid as much as he was, because in that particular role, he is elite. And it does seem like Grana's approach is going to play directly to that. And it seems, if it goes with a 3-5-2.
Wow. Did Gressel, can I just pause here? Did you just throw out a Hernan Grana?
Yeah.
Did I say Hernan
Grana? That was
Grana?
Incredible. Yeah. The biggest nerds among us. Internet. I couldn't, I had to, yeah. I was like, oh my God, you just tossed in a Hernan Grana reference.
Of course meant Hernan Crespo. Yeah. Hernan Losada goes with that 3-5-2. Then Gressel gets to play wing back, which is his best position. So it checks a lot of boxes. Like if you wanted to have like a bounce back player of the year, because it's not really a comeback. I don't believe in giving comeback player of the year to guys who are just bad. I think guys who are injured deserve it.
Shout out,
like, what's that?
Shout out, Ben Bear.
Yeah.
The return for trash award.
I think, but if there's like a bounce back Ben Bear bounce back player of the year award, then like, Gressel would be a good one to bet on, because it just seems to fit. It just seems everything that Losada's talking about and everything that he's done in the past in terms of formation and principles of play just seems to fit Julian Gressel. All
right, let me just throw this little wrinkle in, which is Steve Birnbaum just got surgery this week. It's a 12 to 15 week recovery, puts him back around June and July. And I was excited to see him in this formation and him be one of these players revitalized, because he's been so good in this league. And I think they've really done everything right with him in terms of his timing and his contract and all those things. Do you play still three at the back if it's not the three you want? Or do you practice it and hope that he's then ready to come back when he gets healthy? It makes it a little bit messier, I think, for Losada and what he wants to do. Now, I would say the first thing Losada is trying to do is imprint his principles in the way he wants the game to play. The formation is probably not the exact thing he has to get through to this team. It's, as Doyle said, it's on here when you don't think it is. Take that risk. Those are the things that he's going to work on mainly. But I just am wondering, does he push that for when Birnbaum's back and continues on, or does he go for in the back? And then with Gressel, I still think he can be effective in the midfield or at right back, and just playing and giving that verticality, whatever it is. But I think it makes things a little bit more complicated.
They did go out and sign the American guy, Heinz Eich, who's been, I think, in Scandinavia for the majority of career.
He's in Belgium right now.
Oh, okay. So he's coming in. So that is a replacement there, at least for now, for Steve Birnbaum. You have Pines, you have Briand, you have DeShields that got in the super draft. Doyle, combine these two for me so we can finish this up. The This Is Fine meme, what is the fire surrounding DC United? And then what is the positive side? What could they be, and what's your prediction?
I mean, the This Is Fine thing is all about the DPs or the attack, the big name attackers in Ola and Edison Flores, because they returning these guys. Paul Ariel is gone. Like, okay, it really is kind of the same roster as last year, which was not a good roster. And okay, This Is Fine, I guess. And then what are we doing after that?
Just do your predictions. Yeah.
I think they're a fringe playoff team. I think they will be in the fight up until the last couple of weekends at the very least.
So I'm a little bit higher on what I think they're going to do this year. And I'm going to say they're a fringe home playoff team, which means I think they're battling between the 3 and 6 seed this year. I think this is a good roster and they're experienced players. These are guys who have gotten it done. It's not like, oh, if it all hits, you know what Julian Gressel can do in this league. You know what Ola Kamara can do in this league. Junior Moreno, guys like that. So I like this group, and I think this fresh air, it's weird because it's two conversations. You talk about Seattle, regular season like doesn't even matter. For DC, the regular season's everything. They need to reset themselves in their market. They need to reset themselves internally. So I think there's going to be a lot of energy, a lot of focus throughout this season. I think they're going to have a good year.
You know what makes this really hard when we talk about playoff teams? We don't know exactly how many playoff teams they're going to be yet. So, but I think I'm somewhere between you guys. I'm more comfortable with thinking that they're a playoff team than I think maybe you are, Doyle. And I'm less comfortable thinking that they have the high end that you've sort of outlined here, Dave. So in my mind, I don't know how many playoff teams are going to be, but you're thinking like probably like final days, they're fighting to push their way in, and there's space in that time because of the way I think it'll be packed up to be like anywhere from 5th to like 10th or 11th. All right, let's keep it rolling. Anders is in the chat saying that we should save the 10s for next week because we're running out of time. Let's see how we do with Toronto FC and then the mailbag and make a decision. It'll be okay. We can push them to next week. We'll just make the executive decision right now. Toronto FC, their 2021 season stakes in a haiku. Florida is home. Old legs, new legs, the press is here. Big test for Armas. No snaps, no nothing. Just ushered off the stage, huh? Somebody get the hook. Just take me off. Silence. Yeah. Okay. I thought it summed it up pretty well.
Yeah. I don't think you missed anything. That's the conversation.
That wasn't a compliment.
The conversation is, well, I don't know that the art is that great here, Weeby. It's
okay,
MLS
fine. Get it
on,
turn us
homes
to Toronto FC. The resident.
There's a few conversations. One is, what does Chris Armas bring to this team? A large one is, what's left in a few of these guys? The three that come up every time we talk about this team is Josie, Michael, and Omar. Are they who they were a few years ago? Can they find some place in between? Or are they completely done? And a lot of what this team's going to be kind of relies on this. There's a chance that this is a really good team this year, probably better than they were last year, if it all works. And there's another chance where it all falls apart and they don't have enough minutes without those three guys. I said, if they're not healthy or able to play, to be able to be a high end team like they've been over the last 5-6 years.
Not really signings to talk about here. Mm-hmm. I got a homegrown, but that's really it. Chris Armas was the big signing.
Like a new signing.
Yeah, turning the page from the Greg Vanney era. Who is the star of this team? It's Alejandro Pozuelo. No doubt about that. And Doyle, that really is what so much of this is based around. Like, he is he's the planet that everything orbits. He's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it was enough to almost get this team to a Supporter Shield win last year. Like, that's pretty, they were in there right till the last weekend, and Pozuelo was that good. But
he won the MVP. He's the Landon Donovan Most Valuable Player, the defending MVP.
It doesn't feel like the setup around him is necessarily what it could or should be, right? Because if Michael Bradley is there, Michael Bradley is not a defensive presence anymore. So then you're putting a ton of work on whoever the third central midfielder is. If Jonathan Osorio is out there on one of the wings, Jonathan Osorio is really good, but he's not a goal scoring winger. He's not a guy who blazes through the lines and creates space. If you have a number 10 like Pozuelo, you want wingers who will create. I mean, just think about how Minnesota's played last year in the playoffs with Molino and Finley going vertical every single time. Toronto don't have that on either wing.
But Doyle, might... Sarmas isn't going to play that way.
Isn't right? that okay though? You got two sure? outside backs.
Why do we? Why are we so sure about that? He came to the Red Bulls as an assistant under Jesse Marsh, and then when he became the head coach, he slowed them down.
So what he did was he looked at a team and he said, "What can I add to this group?" And it went from, and anyone who's listening on the podcast, I apologize. The Red Bulls were on the left end of this scale and TFC is on the right end of this scale. And Chris Armas tried to bring the Red Bulls closer to the middle so they didn't only have one way to win. And so I think he's going to now do the opposite with Toronto, which is they're not going to be full out pressing, but they have to press in moments and be more aggressive defensively than they've ever been before. And I think for Chris, he sees the ability to win games in more than one way as the key. So I get what you're saying, Doyle, but I think that's how I'm reading from the outside what I've seen him do. And I think it's less he wants to play deep and be in possession and more he doesn't want his team to be one-dimensional.
Okay. Well, regardless, and you might be right about all that, he certainly spoke to that a lot when he was the Red Bulls head coach. I'm not sure that they have the horses to yep. play a different style. Like I don't, you can't press with Josie and Michael and Omar and Justin Morrow anymore. Like those guys are, they're into their 30s pretty solidly. They all logged a lot of minutes and none of them were impressing anybody with their mobility last year. Well, then it becomes, can you convince them that they're rotation players and not necessarily starters? That's a huge ask. Like, that's a really, really big ask for guys who were DPs or, best 11 face of the team type of players for years and years. All of that stuff that we said about Seattle, how this feels like a year where it could be a big step backwards, I think it applies double to this Toronto team. Now, maybe Pozuelo is so good and Josie gets a second wind and Io gets healthy and is even better than we saw last year. And it just papers over everything. It's a maybe. And I'm leaning towards more that this is a team that's going to find a rough patch really, really early because it's not really clear that they can win in the same way that they've won for so long.
And also the front of that haiku was Florida's home. They continue to have and will have really difficult logistical for sure. aspects of their season. I know Michael Bradley says we don't want to talk about that. That doesn't matter. I mean, come on, it does matter. It does affect teams. It does affect you personally. There's no way around that. 22-22, the player to watch has to be Io Akinola. 9 goals last year, almost got to that double-digit mark. His goals per 90 and his expected goals per 90 were basically bang on at like 0.68 a game. That's pretty dang good. He only played 1,100 minutes or so, and that goes back to what you said, Doyle, which is the injuries. Is he the starter? I mean, I think this is a question about the center forward spot, and the question is Io or Josie or both.
I mean, he's not even training yet from
Oh really?
What, yeah, from what
I thought
we
he was with
heard.
Canada training. What happened in did something happened with Canada?
He left the Canada camp back in January very early. He obviously wasn't called for either the US or Canadian U23s for Olympic qualifying. And then, when asked about it, Jason Christ said there was a medical issue and wouldn't expand upon that. Toronto have not been completely clear, but the last we heard, which is about 10 days ago now, they were waiting for some more tests in the middle of this month and hopefully get him into training then. So I don't think this team will go into the year with Io Akinola as a centerpiece, even though by the end of the year, he very well could be.
And it'll be interesting because, so one, we all know that the expectation was Josie wouldn't be on this team. From Josie, from Toronto, from us, and now he is. But the other thing is, I think he wants to play for the U.S. still. I think he wants to be a piece of what's going on. And he knows he has to play at a higher level and be healthy to do that. And so that's the part where I think at this point where we're at with the windows closed in Europe and fairly unlikely that he's going anywhere, I think everyone gets together and says, how can we make this work for all of us? And from what I've heard, he's coming to camp healthy, slim down, kind of a good part of what they're going to do. And it'll be interesting where Pozuelo and him fit together, because if Io does come back, you can't really play both of them and then Pozuelo in his best spot. but there's a good chance that Josie and Pozuelo together kind of can hit their peak as Pozuelo kind of that second forward coming underneath, creating opportunities and all that. We've said this for 3 years.
I actually think you could play a 3-4-1-2 with Pozuelo underneath Josie and Ayo.
But who's your three? You don't...
Well, that's, I mean, that is the question, right? Do they have the three center backs to do it? Do they have a spot on the field for Osorio when they do that?
Yeah.
And if you have Osorio out there, it's like, okay, you could play him as one of the deeper lying midfielders. Then do you drop Bradley entirely? Because you would need a true defensive, like a ball winner there. So that's what I mean about this roster. As much talent as they have, it doesn't really fit together in a way where the players' strengths necessarily complement each other.
Here's a question from Dwayne Rollins at 24th Minute on Twitter. TFC fans, you'll know him real well. Most of us do as well. Does some great work up north. His question
is my U.S. history knowledge, though.
Yeah. No, you got it. You got it. You proved your bona fides in the pre-meeting. But this is his question. It goes to, I think, the This Is Fine meme, as well as the predictions. He says, Dwayne says, are people underestimating TFC, a team with the second best record overall last year? It should be stressed, simply because they are bored of them.
So I will say for me, I was underestimating them in that when we put together this schedule and I started thinking about teams and how, you know, I viewed them and the angles and whatever, I was pretty down on TFC. And then over the last few days, I've talked to some people that have worked with them and have talked to other players and all this stuff. And I think you can tell by me and Doyle kind of pushing back against each other, I'm actually more positive now than I thought I would be about them. I think there's an element of quality in MLS, right? They are better than a lot of teams in Major League Soccer. There's a bit of unknown, one with the health and two with young guys, because you mentioned Ayo Akinola, but Ralph Priso, Jaden Nelson, if it's Schaffelberg as a wingback or fullback, Jaquiel Marshall Ruddy, there's a lot of young players where you got old guys who maybe can't press and live in Florida for 5 months, and those players might get opportunity and a question of how ready they are. But I think this is a good team. And it's a team that will make moves to help themselves. And so if it's not in this window, again, I trust that they will make a move this summer to make the team better. And they're one of those teams that knows they're good and will be around the top four or five in the Eastern Conference, I think, throughout the year. This was a team that almost won Supporters Shield last year.
No,
living
sure.
out of Hartford, flying home, unknown, with the same players that we said were too old and all those things.
My big question for them, the Fire, I think, is probably center back. And then what you said, Doyle, which is that transition. Like, what are the roles of sort of the leading lights of this club? The guys that took them from below also ran to basically the best team in MLS history at their peak. They haven't had an opportunity in CCL. We know how much they care about that. I'd love for Josie to walk in there and just dominate. That'd be wonderful. What's your prediction for them this year, Doyle?
I think playoffs, but a pretty big step back. They're not going to be competing for the Supporter Shield this year. And it feels like we're 12 months away from a rebuild with this team.
I say safely playoffs, but I agree on the Supporter Shield side. But I think safely playoffs. I don't think it's going to be a team that come decision day is going to be like scrambling. They're going to know the general area where they'll be.
I have them top five in the East as well. Clearly my top five in the East has become evident over the last week. So. Maybe
you
top
have,
six.
You have 14 teams.
Yeah, everyone's top five in the East.
Just
so.
You know, that's key to these predictions. Just keep everybody happy. Top five, every team. Yeah. Top five. All right, we've got four more teams coming on Monday. We'll let you know what those are, and of course, I hope we all have a good Thursday night with the U.S. Olympic qualifying team. Mailbag 4120600 MLS. I'm just going to read these and we'll get them out of the way. We got a lot more in here. We're thinking about doing mailbag on Spaces to get to everything we miss. Also, I believe tonight you guys are going to be on Spaces talking U.S. national team. So if you listen to this before the game, you'll hear that. I am going to get poked. I'm going to have my vaccine. So I'll miss out on the pregame show. Ooh. I will hopefully be there for that postgame show with you guys. Here is Sam Liotta saying, Keaton Park's better than Darlington Nagbe. Are you kidding me, Doyle? All the respect I had for him built up over the last decade has completely vanished. He is now on Ben Bear level. That is a low blow, and I will not allow it. Gas and Weeby, please keep some semblance of sanity on the pod. I refuse. And then Hank again in Salt Lake City, who's got some good emails coming in. This one's a little bit more of a reach. Hey, Dave, way to completely pass over Jimmy Mauer for your goalkeeper rankings. He's the reigning league leader in both goals against average and save percentage. The advanced stats love him, too. Have some respect. He goes to – you know what? You guys are going to talk trash on Ben Bear, but now you have a guarantee in here that Chris Garcia of RSL is going to end up on the 2222 this season.
Boom.
He's thinking 1,600 minutes, 4 goals, 6 assists.
We're here for
so, don't ever – put Ben Bear's name in your mouth without giving him respect. Everybody bringing it back to Ben. He is a legend and will always be such. Let us know what you think of anything we said on this show. We will be back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, everybody.